Going anywhere interesting, Carl?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm going to Oslo, Norway, assuming they'll let me in.
Very cool.
I'm vaccinated, but I'm not sure that my documentation will be up to snuff for Norway. I guess you have to get a European COVID passport kind of thing.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, to get into Germany. I'm flying through Germany. And I believe that the airport has a pharmacy where you can get that. But and my airline bumped up my layover from 2 hours to 4 hours. So I think that's a clue that they're giving me some time to get stuff done.
Yep.
You going through Frankfurt?
That's probably a good idea.
No, I'm going through Munich. But, you know, so you're going to know the week after Thanksgiving if I'm doing the show from the Munich airport.
Right. We will watch for that.
Yeah, you're going to spend a whole week.
Tom Hanks living in the terminal.
Yes, you're going to
spend
Tom Hanks
a whole week at the terminal. Eating Jaeger schnitzel.
Oh, I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
Could be worse. Could be worse.
All right, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I'm down in Arizona this week.
I'm fantastic.
That's right.
Yeah, Arizona. Once you get to Patrick's age, you can't take the cold like
Here. Okay. All right. I was able to walk in shorts for 4 miles today, Smarty.
Listen, I can walk in shorts out in the winter,
Patrick,
too.
Patrick, is it a dry heat?
It's a very dry heat.
They always say that. Oh, but it's a dry heat.
It's like 70 degrees right now.
It's just turn on your oven and step inside. That's what it's like.
Live in Florida for a year. You'll find humid heat.
Yeah.
Wet heat.
I'll pass.
All right.
Wet heat.
So we get started. We're going to go in order, right?
Yep.
Starting with Botanigo.
Botanigo.
Botnets. Got to love botnets.
All right, Patrick, what's a botnet?
A botnet is when bad guys typically collect systems. A lot of times it's IoT devices. And they basically enroll them in their zombie army, and they become robots. Botnet stands for robot.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Well, so then basically, if I have a botnet, let's say I have a 25,000 system botnet or device botnet.
Wait. So IoT first. IoT.
Internet of Things.
So you said there's zombie armies of IoT devices
I'll give you an example. Let's say I found a hack. A 0 day for a popular brand of video camera that is on the internet.
Sure.
And I went around and I automated attacks and I found 100,000 of them and I was able to co-opt 25,000. Mm. So now I have 25,000 individual devices connected to the internet. And if I put a command and control structure on them so that they check in regularly for commands, I can have those devices do whatever I want. Denial of service comes to mind. I can have them click on ads that I post so it looks like 25,000 different people are clicking on my ads and generate revenue that way. I can do crypto mining on them. There's a lot you can do if you have a botnet.
So when I hear IoT, I think like little Raspberry Pi devices or, you know, Arduino kind of project things that you 3D print cases for and stick on the
refrigerator,
roof of your car.
Your refrigerator might have an internet connection and that would make it an IoT device. It's
right.
Internet
but
of things.
I guess what I'm saying is these devices are mostly like routers and NAS devices and modems and things like that, right?
I think that.
Right. Yeah. Thermostats and cameras.
Wait a second. So what you're saying, Carl, is those devices you just listed. Those are part of the infrastructure of the internet and of networks. They're not typically Internet of Things. Internet of Things is a thing that like a thermos that has an internet connection.
Okay.
Or a door or a camera or a thermostat or.
Yeah. So typically botnets take advantage of these devices because they're not usually updated frequently. And lots of times they have really terrible passwords and that sort of stuff. However, in this particular article, when we're talking about the Botanigo malware bot, this one does breach routers, firewalls, and NAS devices, right? So, and what's interesting about this particular attack is, A, it's half-baked, which is weird. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But B, it is exploits on targeting millions of devices, but all of these are old exploits. So they're all from 2015, 2016, 2017, just got with 2014 in there. There's some 2020 exploits in there, but not too many. Most of it is if you haven't patched your router, Netgear, D-Link, Realtek, Tenda device in the last couple of years, shame on you, and it should be patched. And you might be participating in a half-baked
botnet. I understand. I misunderstood. I thought this was about a botnet made up of IoT devices. This is a botnet targeting IoT devices.
Yes. Yeah. And it depends. I mean, IoT is kind of a loose term, right? So Internet of Things could literally be everything on the internet. We think of it in our business mostly as like little devices, tank, like, thermostats TVs. And things you'd plug into the wall and turn your, TVs and that sort of stuff. Right. But really, what's the difference between a TV and a firewall, right? I mean, they both run some flavor of Linux.
Well,
they both have access to
I'm
the internet.
I'm hoping that my TV doesn't have an incoming port open. You know, I don't want it to be a server. I just want it to be a client.
I can tell you it probably does. We've breached customers over TVs before. So in this particular case, I mean, lots of these devices are participating in this botnet. And what's interesting about this botnet is, like I said, it's half-baked. There's no real command and control structure out there. So typically when you find, 25,000 devices that are participating in something together, there's somebody commanding it. And in this case, it looks like it's just ready. It's half connected and listening, but not really doing anything yet.
Oh, is that what half-baked means?
So that's what half-baked means. So it's almost like either A, they've released it a little bit early to test it and it spread a lot faster than they thought it would, or B, it's the first stage, right? So first stage of the attack. Where they've dropped something that's going to access a certain number of devices, report back, let them know how many devices they have access to, and then they hit it with a second stage.
So the take home for Joe, average computer user out there, do we have to worry about it?
Patch your stuff.
Yeah, you do, unfortunately. So the take home for Joe average user is, again, patch. But don't just think about your Windows computer and your iPhone. You should take a look at all of the things in your house that's connected to the internet, and that includes firewalls, and go out and patch. The reason that's important is, although these particular exploits targeted millions of like routers and D-Link routers and that sort of stuff, and a lot of them are really old exploits. There's another article we'll post the link to out here as well from Hacker News, where there's a relatively new exploit, CVE 2021-34991. So it came out this year, doing a very similar thing where it's attacking routers. And it's interesting. So this one actually attacks a router and its UPnP. Port.
Universal plug and play.
So, So the UPnP is a protocol that you can go out. Let's say I plug my Xbox into my network, and for some reason, for it to participate in, you know how sometimes you connect to Xbox Live and it says you have a moderate connection.
Okay.
And then if you need to have like a really super fast connection, what'll happen is it will query the firewall and it'll go through UPnP and say, hey, can you temporarily open a port to me, right? To this Xbox, so that I can get really fast connections back and forth and I'm not NATed and that sort of stuff. So that's generally what UPnP is for. Plug something in, it gets access to kind of manipulate the firewall a little bit in a safe way. This exploit that was discovered is when you subscribe to that UPnP, you open up a port. When you unsubscribe to it, there's a way of popping a buffer on there, overflowing the buffer on there, where you can run any command you want. You're running a system.
So I got a question. Patch my Amazon Fire TV stick? How do you patch your refrigerator? Like, You know what I'm saying? Like a computer, a phone.
No, I know exactly what you're saying.
Download the latest updates, but I don't have, you know, I don't have any user interface for these things.
So for routers and firewalls, this is pretty easy. It's usually go to the web page of the routers, the IP address, usually .1 on your network.
Yeah, an appliance with a name and a model number and a serial number we can figure out. But what about, you know, what does Samsung know about my refrigerator that I need to patch it? First of all, it's not and on that's Wi-Fi anyway, but what if it was?
Yeah, and that's the problem. Like, for example, I have a Honeywell thermostat here that I've had in the house connected to the Wi-Fi, to our guest Wi-Fi, but still connected to the Wi-Fi for a long time. I've never patched that. I don't even know if
I can. Yeah, right. And I imagine that.
So some IoT devices are tough.
A lot of people listening who are in the same kind of paranoid state right now.
Well, right. So for devices like that, I mean, my general suggestion is for devices that you don't know how to patch, or you have or don't have a patching facility, which God forbid they don't. Those go on a guest
Wi-Fi.
Those go on like a guest Wi-Fi, where you know what, somebody breaches it.
I think
it
that's
sucks,
true of all.
But they're not going to get
that's
access.
True of to all. It.
All devices.
IoT devices. All devices that aren't like PCs and stuff.
Yeah, we said that before. If the device that you're accessing is just needs access to the internet, use the guest Wi-Fi.
Network. Right.
Yeah, it is a great standard for any device that only needs internet access. And then you can put, usually for guest Wi-Fi, you can put more restrictive rules like it doesn't have access to UPnP or it doesn't have access to opening up ports or whatever, right? Because there's no need for that, for those types of devices, which is nice.
Let's talk about Windows.
Wouldn't be that time of the week if we didn't talk about Windows.
That's right.
I like how the article says... It says a free unofficial patch. I didn't know they were.
Yeah, 0-day bug in all Windows versions gets a free unofficial patch. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah. You need to be careful with the free unofficial patches. So this is the article we're talking about here. Again, we post all the links, but this is a 0-day bug for local privilege escalation. So we've talked about what we call PrivEsc. But privilege escalation is just I'm running as a normal user, and I can run some piece of code to manipulate the system to make me a super user.
Or an admin.
Where I can do anything I want. Yeah, an admin, somebody with administrative credentials.
But you have to be on the system.
You'll hear that.
It's not initial access.
Right.
No. Exactly. I mean, in sometimes local, this particular one's a local PrivEsc. In some cases, there are remote PrivEscs where you can have a guest context on a remote box in PrivEsc, but most of the time PrivEscs are local. It's like, hey, I finally got onto this particular computer with an exploit, and now I need to be an administrator so I can shut down antivirus, right? Or something along those lines. So what's interesting about this particular privilege escalation bug is it was partially patched already. So it was discovered. Microsoft, in one of the patch Tuesdays, thought they had patched it. And come to realize there's a very simple manipulation to make it still exploitable, where you can still get local privilege escalations. And currently, there is no official Microsoft patch. So this affects Windows 10, Windows 11, and Server 2022, even if it's fully patched today.
You know what that reminds me of, Dwayne? Remember when we were on site with a customer? It must have been like 15 years ago. And they had kiosk computers to let people access the internet.
Oh my God, yeah.
And we're like, okay, so like these kiosks are secure. You guys are comfortable. Can we test these? Oh yeah, you know, absolutely secure. And you know, Dwayne turns around while I'm finishing the conversation. He's got access to an admin prompt. And the guy's like, what did you do? He's like, well, I need to know if this actually, he's no, let me go get another one. And he gets another device and gives it to Dwayne.
He's like, oh, that one wasn't configured properly. Let me get you a different
one. So then he gets us an official one, and Dwayne gets on it like instantly. And he tells him how he got on it. And the guy's like, oh, let me make that change. We went through this like four times.
You're under arrest.
And at the fourth time, the guy's like, this is it. After this, I just give up. You should do the configuration. Yeah.
Good thing you weren't in Missouri.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Good
You'd
thing.
Still be there.
I'd have been thrown in the clink. So this particular PrivEsc, and it's a good sort of parallel, because in this particular PrivEsc, you do need to be on the local box. Yeah. You need to be running as a local user. It is also a much smaller, like people get really worried, like, oh my God, an unauthenticated process could run something and become right. administrator. In this particular process, you actually do need the user's credentials to exploit it.
Okay.
So you need the user's username and password. So a lot of collectively on the internet, everybody should go, okay, all right, it's not as bad as we think,
yeah.
right? It's still a privesc, it still should be taken care of, but you know, maybe change your password on your computer once in a while and it's not that big a deal. The reason they say this is a unofficial patch, and this is where I point this out to be very careful. There is another company, not mm-hmm. Microsoft, zeropatch.com, that's releasing a patch for this before Microsoft wow. does. Now, I don't know anything about zeropatch.com. It doesn't mean that they're bad people or good people. I mean, heck, maybe Microsoft contracted them. I have no idea. But you want to be careful if your patches are not coming from the source the operating yeah. system came from.
Yeah, that's
So in this case, although they do mention a free patch from somebody else, I personally wouldn't apply it. I would just change my password and make sure that I'm not running right. anything, you know, super Agreed. Sketchy.
Okay. Let's move on to RAM hacks. RAM being memory, random access memory that you put in your computer. You have in your computer, you've probably never seen it. But turns out that that can be hacked. How?
Oh, this is Twain's favorite topic today.
This is honestly, I love it when the physical world meets the digital world in a wonderful marriage of hacking
obstruction
and exploitation.
So you look at yeah. this thing with the same kind of delight that, say, you know, like a horror movie expert would
yeah. like an arsonist.
Yeah, yeah.
Watching like a fire.
An arsonist watching a fire that he set steps back. He's proud of his work.
I don't know. Most arsonists will watch any
looks
fire.
At a wildfire and goes, you can see the beauty yeah. in that.
Look at the purple flames. There must be some magnesium in there.
Exactly.
I have no idea if that's even accurate.
Now I'm going to get the hate mail. So this is neat. This is a process called Rowhammer. And for those of you who are like super into security, Rowhammer has been around for a little while. Let me break down Rowhammer a little bit.
Your so character in WoW?
I thought yeah, it was where the 1990 Protector Olympics of the Realm. Took place.
Lillehammer. That was Lillehammer.
Might have been. So Rowhammer is a neat technique because imagine, if you will, and I'm going to present it a lot more simple than it actually is, but give you kind of the same understanding.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. It was 1994, not 1990.
Oh.
Well, see, that's why. Right.
We need to be accurate here on security this week.
At least
I'm sorry, go
in
ahead.
Terms to Olympic years. That's it.
Yeah. I was close. I was only 4 years off, which is really only one Olympics off.
I mean, honestly, it's far better than being 1 year off with an Olympics because that really
one year anyway, rotation on.
I digress. Go ahead.
So what Rowhammer is imagine, if you will, you have a bunch of pins on a CPU or a RAM chip.
Oh, okay, we just lost 100,000 listeners right there. Imagine pins on a CPU. Oh, sure, no problem.
Let me imagine those. And they're so small now, they're not even pins. I remember when they used to actually be pins and not these tiny little gold contacts.
But anyway, so anyway. A RAM module has a bunch of contacts. And it slips into a socket, and each one of those contacts is a communications channel, if you will. All right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the motherboard can communicate with the RAM chip or the CPU or whatever it is over these little contacts. What's neat about that is, let's say I could then I ask a question. I say, hey, am I an administrator on this particular computer? And I do it in a complicated way. I either try and run a program as an administrator, whatever it is. And the system comes back and goes, no, you're not an administrator. Well, there's a part of the RAM chip that's responsible for that response. That says, hey, nope, you know, comes back with a true or false. In this case, comes back with false. You're
so
not
there's
an administrator.
One bit false. In that RAM chip that's either zero or one, and you're going to hack
right.
it.
Now think to yourself, what is a zero and a one? Honestly,
it's
in a computer.
It's a switch.
Right? If you were to break this down, Right, but is it a switch?
No. Yeah, it's something like, that stores because, either a one or a zero, either right, true or false.
But it does it by a level of magnetism.
Yes, that's okay. Yeah, exactly.
And that level of magnetism is discrete.
So if I were to take a computer and shut it off entirely, unplug it from power, is it sending all zeros?
Yeah, I see. It has to
have power.
It's
not, right? Exactly. So if no power is not a zero, well, then what's a zero? Well, a zero is a little bit higher right. than no power, right? So and it's a window, right? We're talking the differences of, it's not like it's an exact voltage. It's maybe a little higher,
it's
maybe a little bit lower.
A percentage of a volt.
Exactly. So let's say 5 volts is a one, and 2 volts is probably a zero, and no volts means okay. it's off, right? What's 3.5 volts? Is that
a
zero?
That's a quark.
Is that a one?
Well, but the problem is it's a binary thing. It's got to be one or the other. So when right. you reach the threshold, you're now a one.
So now let's say, okay, there's this little fuzzy area in the middle where it could be a one, could be a zero. We're not quite sure. But computers don't operate that way usually. It's either absolutely a one or absolutely a zero.
In the room. If it's not zero and it's not 2 volts, then it must be on.
Right. Right. So now let's say I keep asking this one pin. And like I said, I'm simplifying a little bit, but I keep asking this one pin. Am I an admin? Am I an admin? Am I an admin? And it keeps coming back as zero. False. No, 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 no.
How about now? How about now?
How about now? Actually, that's a great analogy. Okay. We're going to come back to that. So let's say the pin next to it is a pin that's responsible for some mathematical algorithm. So if I try and add 2 plus 2, the pin next to our pin answering no is responsible for adding 2 plus 2. And I tell that pin, I want to do that a bazillion times a second.
Ooh, raise the heat.
So the heat and the static electricity on that pin go so high that it bleeds to the pins next
That's
to it.
That's so tricky.
And now my other pin is just high enough where it goes, yep, you
All
must
right,
be an admin.
How can RAM manufacturers manufacture something that would be so obviously hackable?
Because it's not obvious.
So it's not obvious. Oh my
it's
God.
Possible.
It's obvious when it's explained.
But it
but
is
it's
possible,
so not
right? It's possible yeah. for these yeah, things to overheat and affect
but,
their
but
yes,
but there.
Yeah.
And well, it's interesting because there have been protections put in the past in CPUs to protect against this. Because first, initially, this was found in a CPU. And there have been protections put into memory and protections
How about
put into
why
CPU,
the hell is this guy trying to add 2 plus 2 a billion times? Don't do that.
Well, that's important.
Let's let him do
right?
it 3 times, and that's enough.
Dude, if we had that kind of control, there'd be no need for security anyways. We'd have
can
to see
right.
control.
Yes, you're right.
So you can see the elegant
I
beauty
guess you're
of
right.
this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right? Where you can manipulate the physical to then give you the digital answer you want. Now, what's interesting about this is the article then talks about being able to steal crypto keys, a 2,000-bit private key that encrypts data. You go, okay, well, how would you do that through just running a particular
Guys,
pins
it's been
really
nice recording the last episode of Security This Week with you guys.
Wait a minute, what's that
I'm
drone doing
up.
Over my house? Why is there a drone over my house?
I'm done.
I'm giving up.
To the bunkers.
I'm going to put a blindfold over my eyes and never think about it again.
So I have a side story I want to tell you that's interesting. When I was working, when I first got out of the service, I was working for a big insurance company, and they had an office that had a computer that every day around the same time would reboot. Hmm. And they couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. So they replaced the motherboard and the power supply and the RAM. And this was in like the early 90s. And they went to the point of replacing the entire computer, and it still happened. Hmm. I mean, they did things like replace the mouse pad and the keyboard and the mouse. I mean, they were just desperate to figure it out. So they just told the woman who worked on it, just don't use it. Just shut it off, you know, earlier in the day. Don't use it around that time. And what they found out by just pure happenstance is that a microwave antenna at a building across the street was sending a burst transmission around the same time every day through that corner of the building.
Wow.
And cooking the person at the computer along with scrambling the electronics.
Ouch.
And
wow.
So I could also see you using a very focused beam of energy to do the same kind of thing.
Is this where we need a disclaimer? Please, well, viewers, don't.
We're giving people
in the microwave to see if you can.
We just talked about the fact that those cyber attacks, the you know, Havana syndrome, yeah. Those are physical attacks. Those are energy based attacks. And yeah. So technically, what yep. Hero Hammer is, it's an energy based attack.
Mm.
Yep. But it's coming from inside yeah. the chip.
I just find it awesome that you can manipulate the chip that way to get it to do not random things, but what you want it to do, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah. 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 Wow. Guiding the chaos is awesome.
He's so cool. And coming back to your analogy, Carl, of a child asking, right. How about now? How about now? How about now? I think as a parent, you get so hot under the collar, eventually fine, you go, fine,
have just the damn cookie. Just get away from me.
That's Rohammer from parenting, which makes perfect sense.
Kid hammer. Well, you know, the how about now, how about now, how about now is kind of germane to what we're going to talk about next, which is denial of service. And denial of service is a classic attack where, like you were saying, the botnet, you know, you yeah. get a whole bunch of zombie computers out in the world and you just have them hammer a website. And it doesn't even have to be any kind of rogue URL, just like just a regular old website.
Well, if I can get 10 systems in 10 different households with broadband internet to come after you with as much bandwidth as they can muster,
right?
I'm going to overwhelm you because you only have one broadband connection and I have 10.
Right.
So it's just the, I mean, that's not how, that's an oversimplification.
Sure.
But that's how it works.
So this is a distributed denial of service attack or DDoS attack.
Which just means it's coming from different places because
right.
the attack platforms are in different places.
With yeah,
different
a single denial of service attack is just one computer hitting, you know.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So
like Loic.
So this is news from November 17th, and it's in atlasvpn.com. The number of DDoS attacks globally hit record heights in Q3 2021. Now, I thought this was an old hack. Like, I thought denial of service was something that if you have your websites, like, you know, in the cloud and you've got some sort of load balancer in front of it or some sort of gateway, that they can detect a denial of service attack and deny those clients.
And if your house has a state-of-the-art security system, you won't get burglarized. But most houses don't have a state-of-the-art security system.
Right.
And most websites aren't protected by DDoS because it adds extra cost.
Well, I get that. Well, but I still think that, you know, it's very surprising for me to see that it's hitting record numbers right now.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting about DDoS is we all think of DDoS as pouring on the speed.
Yeah.
But as pushing as much data as you possibly can, which is super easy for a firewall to see. But take something like the slow loris attack. The slow loris attack is you go to a web server and you say, hey, I'm looking for a page.
Oh.
And the web server comes back and goes, okay, what page? 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 And you just sit there and it eats up so much resources it causes a denial of service.
Oh,
so
I see.
There's so some interesting attacks that
so
can
it's something
be
that keeps right. the connection open, like the socket, yeah. if you will.
Yeah.
Keeps the connection right, exactly. open and busy, like you would if you were yep. uploading a file or something like that.
Right.
And if the file just never stops.
I think I stood behind that person at the McDonald's today.
I thought you were going to say the DMV.
Let me guess. They were ordering a bucket of McRibs, right?
I always pick the wrong line. I guarantee whatever line I pick is always going to be the slowest.
So, you know what's interesting about the statistics of this, though, is the increase, they're attributing the entry increase here to the inverse value of cryptocurrency.
What?
Yeah. So they say, hey, listen, when cryptocurrencies are worth a lot of these bad guys use those DDoS systems to mine currency instead.
They're bored.
And then when currency goes down, they go, it's not worth it to mine. Let's shut people off.
So I thought mining currency was done in the privacy of your own basement with a bazillion video card systems.
Well, it's done with botnets.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, there are some CPU mining algorithms out there that you can use to mine with your CPU, not necessarily a GPU anymore. They're not as efficient, but if you steal a trillion PCs, then they get really at, you know,
good
at mining. So
Well, this is interesting. Yeah. So that really doesn't affect everybody listening, except to say that if your website is not behind some sort of gateway or proxy, you know, that's controlling for a DDoS attack, you might want to rethink that.
I think the advice would be figure out what the cost would be if your site went down for a day.
Yeah.
And then look at what it costs for you to protect from it and then extrapolate. Would I rather pay that price every month, month after month? Or would I rather take the chance that I'm going to be down for a day if I get attacked by a DDoS?
Patrick, as usual, comes up with the most lame brain ideas I've ever heard in my life.
I mean, actually, right? Fiscal conservatism. And
cost-benefit analysis.
Just that. all right. So Russia's back in the news.
Oh, I missed them.
China in the same headline. Russian ransomware gangs start collaborating with Chinese hackers. Oh man, we're fucked.
That's like finding out that alien zombies are here.
it's like two superpowers.
Superpowers. And
yep.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's it's interesting. I always love how researchers get onto these Chinese or Russian hacking forums and then just post this information. And the Russian hackers don't go, wait, should we go through our user list and get rid of some people? Because it seems like people are reporting stuff. But so
there's
in this particular
low
case,
in the fridge.
There's a Russian speaking cyber crime forum.
Okay.
That they are advertising for interest in adopting some Chinese advanced persistent threat actors to help out and collaborate. So they're looking to be friendly, and that's nice. Yeah,
okay.
It's good. They'll work together on some sort of super virus.
That's awesome. I like togetherness.
Supercomputer virus. Computer virus.
Makes me happy.
If they went into the same building, that would be convenient.
You talking about some drone action?
You know, depends on the jurisdiction. low orbit ion cannon action would also work.
Right. Tungsten rod from space. Jesus, Patrick.
You know, somebody's putting fish sauce in their borscht. That's all I want to say. Is that okay?
So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Is that politically incorrect?
Probably not.
Who doesn't?
Oh,
I like it in hamburgers.
Never eat borscht. Every time I was studying Russian, they wanted us to have borscht. I'm like, no, thank you.
What is
a cold beet soup?
Yeah, it's beets
with sour cream.
Oh, so it's actually really good. You lost me on every word. Cold beet and soup.
It sounds terrible.
Wow, this is good.
if you have the vodka with it, it's probably
vodka
fine.
With borscht, big dollop sour cream is good. Put fish sauce in, even better.
So he's not making this up. He's quoting a friend of his who we will not name. You know who I'm talking about, Carl.
Yeah, I have a friend.
Oh, my God.
Who used to brag about all the crazy foods that he eats. Have you ever had lamb testicles? No. What? No, it's good.
He'd say that about everything.
He'd say about everything. Pig eyeballs. Just never mind.
Political.
Hey, monsters. I got this friend who likes to eat liverwurst dipped in chocolate.
Okay.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And he's on this podcast.
What?
It's not dipped in chocolate. It's Nutella plus liverwurst.
Okay.
Sorry.
I can't complain back. From a nutrition point of view.
When I was a kid,
liverwurst is liver. In fact, is one of the most nutritious foods you can eat.
When I was a kid, I used to have.
How is that possible? Doesn't liver filter out all the crap?
Plus, that's where all the nutrients.
So wouldn't it be like a crap sponge?
When I was a kid, I used to have liverwurst sandwiches, and when people would occasionally steal my lunch, I would threaten to make them eat it. And when they found out what it was, they gave it back immediately.
And they said, "Now bring me some chocolate covered liverwurst tomorrow."
That was a later development when Nutella became common.
All right. So I want to bring this one up. This is an old article. Actually, it's not that old. It's from March. Why you shouldn't use the Gmail app on your iPhone after new privacy disclosure. So I sent this to you guys and I said, hey, is this still a thing? And basically the long and, you know, to make a short story longer, Google has some stark new data harvesting disclosures and they should serve as a warning. You should delete the app from your phone, this article says, right now. They've really upped the tracking. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. They basically own you.
It is interesting. I could see Google like, okay, you're using the Gmail app and one of the permissions they ask for is location. You go, why do you need to know my location right when I'm using email? And I could see Google going, whoa, it's for your security. Like if you just happen to show up in Russia using your Gmail,
yeah,
it's weird, right? So we want to know where you are. And honestly, I don't think that's why they're using it, but I could see them claiming, right, we want access to all of your contacts. We're an email app. Of course we need access to all of your contacts, right? So unfortunately, I could probably justify it, but if you look at the permissions required for the Gmail app, it's like everything. There's all the permissions there.
All right.
Which is intriguing.
That's enough for me. I will, I'm going to delete it. It's probably too late, but you know, what if I just like delete all my accounts and start over?
Right. Even that's hard to do.
Go ahead. Track me.
Right. Do it. Are we talking about the FBI today?
I don't know. You got a link that I don't know about?
Under the Botana GoBot link. You'll see the FBI.
I missed that one.
No.
FBI systems hacked to email urgent warning about fake cyber attack. So this came out. This is another Bleeping Computer article, November 13th. This one's awesome. So,
or less awesome in my opinion.
It's pretty awesome. So there's needless to say, there's a hacker rivalry going on out there. And one of the hackers, I'm going to butcher this guy's name, I'm sure. But his online handle is Pom Pom Purin,
that was meant to be read, not spoken, apparently.
Apparently. Decided that he would play around with the FBI's LEAP system. So the Law Enforcement Enterprise Portal, or LEAP, is defined by the Bureau as a gateway providing law enforcement agencies, intelligence groups, and criminal justice entities access to beneficial resources.
All right.
That's all it is. So it's just a portal that you can register for. And unfortunately, when you register for it, like every great system out there, it sends you an email. It says, hey, here's your, you want access to LEAP? Here's your secure code. Right. We've all had systems like that because they want to verify that the email address is real.
And it's a good bet that your email address is you if you have one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And this gives you a great way to filter out addresses that shouldn't be there. So let's say you don't want someone from Gmail, registering, or Proton Mail registering on this LEAP system because it's for law enforcement and intelligence groups. It probably should be a gov address. So if you put in a Gmail, it goes, go away. But in this particular case, no matter what email address you put in there, if you clicked register, the code that you needed to type in was sent down to your browser in a JavaScript.
Clear text.
So they did send the email with the code. And when you typed it in your browser, a little piece of JavaScript that's in your browser said, yup, it matches, and allowed you to go
forward. Now, allowing you to go forward, does that mean that you have your
it's a client
authorized?
Side waiting to happen.
So wait, it gets worse than that.
You're authenticated, but are you authorized to do anything?
So in this particular case, as soon as you submitted the code, it then sent you an email like, hey, welcome to the LEAP system, or hey, we're waiting for your validation or your verification for the LEAP system or whatever. And the subject of the email, the body of the email, and who the email was sent to also came down to your browser And you could change the JavaScript to say, nope, send it to somebody else and change the body and change the subject and then repost it. And you could then unlimited, if you wanted to, send emails out as the FBI.
Oh, my God.
Because the client was the one that was validating that the person wasn't doing anything.
So the worst thing to do.
The FBI should stop hiring college graduate JavaScript wonks to write their websites.
Or people who haven't paid attention to technology until the late 90s.
I mean, you guys have dealt with the government and with the FBI. Are they really that thick?
Well, it's not the organization as a whole didn't get together to make this decision. Some person made a stupid decision.
There are some really brilliant people.
So is Google.
Yeah, there are some really brilliant people at the FBI. I guarantee you they weren't working on this site.
All right.
They hired it out to someone.
I remember talking to Jonathan Zook. You know Jonathan?
Yeah. Yes.
And he started this. He doesn't do it now, but he started this organization, ACT, in D.C. And his job was to educate lawmakers on technical things so that they wouldn't do stupid things like
laws.
Yeah. Well, also just when they get up and speak, they can sound intelligent. Like, you know, one senator during some trial or whatever was reading a document and said the word login.
Instead of login,
login. And then, you know, railing against cookies.
Login is a situation that happens at his favorite bar.
Yeah, low gin.
They get low on gin.
Hey, we got low gin. Don't use
but
your
Patrick,
real username.
Your point is well
that.
Taken that you can't pin the entire organization's intelligence. Obviously, intelligence is in their name.
Well, so if you think about it, it's lowest bidder. And then a lot of times what's happening is people are using automated tools.
Yeah.
We see it a lot with our competition. A lot of times people hire our competition and they say, yep, yeah, this site is perfect. It's fine. No problem. Mm-hmm. And no human ever looks at the code or the source. Mm-hmm. We always look at the source. We always look at the code to see for things like this. But an automated test tool might not see this.
Right.
Right.
Wow.
And right. So it is an interesting example of even some of the brightest and best organizations still fall prey to some of the very simple dev issues that can cause security issues like this. Client-side code doing anything other than changing the font and color of the page is probably absurd.
Oh, I just got into this website. I'm going to view source. Hey, look at that. There's some JavaScript.
You're going to jail, man.
I can save this and run it
again. You're going to jail. Well, the funny thing is, this is hacking because he took the client-side HTML, manipulated it, and then sent it for malicious purposes. That is hacking. Whereas what happened in Missouri where the guy just viewed the source and made an observation is not.
Yep.
Well, that's a good point. So this would have been different if Pompurin had taken this exploit without exploiting it and sending out to thousands of people. And had then gone to the FBI and said, hey,
but I also thought it was really funny and ironic, the message that he sent. Hey, you're going to get some email from the FBI talking about these scams. Yeah, those are fake.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So okay.
Awesome. And you always think to yourself, if you could send an email as the FBI, like you're an outside bad actor, you could send an email. Would that be it? Would that be the one?
I don't know. All right, guys. What's the title for this week's show?
Oh, it's got to have Rohammer in it.
That's a tough one.
How about Rohammer time?
There you go.
I like that. That's awesome.
All right, done. All right, guys. It's been fun. We'll see you next week. Have a nice Thanksgiving.